Potters. Welcome to episode 274 of Cosplot, the podcast for all things cosplay. Happy 420, everybody! It is 420 as we're recording this, but that really has nothing to do with anything.
I was about to say, we are so incredibly milquetoast plain, we have nothing to do with 420.
We are party poopers.
We are very much boring. Party poopers. We go to bed at like, what, 9 o'clock?
Sometimes earlier, depending on how hard I worked that day. That's also mostly because I need to sleep.
I get up at 5 a.m.
Anyways, we're here to talk about cosplay.
Yes, supposedly.
And sleep is also very necessary for working on cosplay, might I add. I'm going to very carefully do my cosplay updates because it is a pile of fabric, and it is a pile of very clean white fabric that is now mostly sewn together. Yay! But first, I'm going to show a couple other things, because somebody had asked me recently, I forget who it was in chat, but somebody had asked me about the Lolita costume that I had been looking to make. And I don't know if you all had ever seen this, but this is the pattern that I was going to use. And this is Simplicity, so you can see the pattern number in case you want to pick it up for yourself. But it is a Simplicity pattern. I don't know which of the variations I want to make. They just more or less have different amounts of ruffles. Between each one, that's pretty much the only difference between these, aside from the type of fabrics that they used. But this will just be a base. I will not make it precisely like this, because there are some things about it I don't like. One of which would be a longer skirt for my own modest taste. But also because the sleeves that they use are very long. Mm-hmm. They're not quite kimono length, but they seem to be a little longer than maybe yukata length.
Yeah, it looks like that.
Yeah, and especially if you're having to operate, say, a camera during a panel, those sleeves can get really, really awkward really quickly. So I would like to simply shorten those up just a little bit. I don't know if I want to go bell sleeves or not. I think I'd rather still keep it yukata shaped, just maybe a little bit shorter. Mm. So that will be, I don't know if it will be my next project, but it will be one of my next projects because I really want to work on my Jedi, which I did go to Joann's today on the way back from the motorcycle store. And unfortunately, they do not have Simplicity 5805, which is the Jedi pattern, anymore in stock, at least not in person. I'm sure I could buy it online, but then they're going to charge me full price for it plus shipping. And so I may have to wait and see if they're going to put that pattern back in print again. Occasionally Simplicity does that. Sometimes they'll do runs of old patterns. Or I can just draft it myself, which I think is what I'm going to ultimately end up doing.
It's not that bad. It's, as we said last time, it's just a lot of rectangles and boxes.
It is.
It's not that bad.
It is. And then this is the other one that I was thinking about. This is a steampunk pattern, so there's Simplicity in the number. This is an older pattern, but I wanted to Disney-fy it, which you can see they did a Snow White take on this one.
Yeah.
I want to do Mulan or my take on it. So we shall see
Mulan
how that
goes.
Yeah, she's one of my favorite Disney princesses.
Same. And she's not
so
a princess.
That was They classify her as a Disney princess.
They do, and
so.
I'm like, she's not a princess.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm having to unfold massive amounts of satin fabric because I have finished sewing everything except for the zipper and the binding on the dress. So,
yay!
You know, there's my lovely white satin dress, which I know you can't see all of because I don't stand during the podcast. But I just have to install the zipper so you can see all of my lovely frayed white fabric. That's where the zipper goes. And then I have to bind the bottom, which I cut a whole bunch of spare strips for. Yay, bias binding. Because unfortunately, while I did not have enough fabric to properly make a full circle skirt, which makes me very sad because it needed to be a full circle skirt, but the scraps that I had were not long enough to make extra skirt panels. But I did have enough to make a sort of, I don't even what you know what you'd call them, but they're basically just panels on the side like Zelda. Mm-hmm. They're a little bit shorter than the other skirt panels. But I had just enough fabric, which is what this is, to do that part. And then I have the little, the apron piece, which that's the back. That's the front. I just have to figure out what I'm going to put on it. So at the moment, I'm actually hand sewing the belt that these are all going to sit on, because I want to make them separate pieces, you know, Amber and her modular costumes. So I'm going to have the dress piece, and then I'm going to have the side panels and the apron on a belt so that I can put that on separately. Yay. So I'm almost there. And then I found just enough scrap of the same fabric. I found another chunk of fabric that I didn't even know I had. It was sitting in a box. And it was the same color and it was the same dye lot.
Good.
Surprisingly. I don't know how it ended up in the box. But
let's not ask questions. Let's just be happy it's there.
I am. I found just enough scrap. This little baby piece of scrap right here. It's so cute. I'm going to use this to make petal sleeves.
Oh, okay, great.
So I'm going to, you know, since we talked about it last episode, bling up my costume a little bit. I'm going more art book. It'll be a lot more artsy of a costume. It will not be canon. So if you're going to sit here and try and compare my dress to the version that they show in the anime and the version that they show on the figurines, it's not going to be accurate. I know that.
And I don't
care.
It's
not canon. It's meant to be more of an art book, like an Art Nouveau type version of it. Mm-hmm. That's how I'm envisioning it in my head, because it's whatever custom ideas I'm coming up with to make it look fancier.
Yeah.
Without adding like rhinestones, that not that kind of bling. So that is what I have gotten so far. I haven't done the pattern for the petal sleeves yet.
Okay.
So I'm not quite sure how they're going to look yet. I know it'll probably end up being similar to the Arwen costume that I have, because it has the drop sleeves on the bottom. Mm-hmm. So if I can find that pattern piece, which I know I have, if I can find it, I may end up trying to use that. I don't know if it'll fit. This is not very wide fabric. It's not a wide scrap. So I don't know how much I'm going to have. May need to do some alterations there and compromise. Mm-hmm. So progress is being made very slowly. It took me a while because I was hand stitching all the fabric together, hand basting it first, because it's so slippery that it will slide under my sewing machine. And it was not going well. So I was like, I don't want to sew this twice. I don't want to have to rip seams.
Sure.
Even though I have now learned what the red button on a seam ripper is for. I don't want to have to use it. So I have been hand basting the pieces first and then stitching them down. And it looks very, very nice.
Good.
Having been done that way. I haven't figured out what I'm going to do about my seams because the skirt is not lined. So right now the seams are raw. I haven't figured out what to do. If I'm going to do a turn seam on the inside, like French style seam.
Right.
Or if I just want to interface over it.
You could.
Or who knows. I'm thinking about it. Interfacing would be fastest.
It would be fast.
It'll be a lot of extra stitching if I do an extra turn on the inner seam. If I do a bound seam. And I don't have that much extra fabric left over. I have just enough to make kanzashi for the headpiece. I can make little folded flowers because I want to also fancy up her hairpiece.
Of course. Of course you do.
But not much. Again, not rhinestone bling. Just adding a little bit to make it look nicer. That's all. Sorry, I'm simultaneously listening because they just broke in with the weather again and they're talking about tornadoes again. So. Anyways, that has pretty much been all that I've been able to get done in the past 2 weeks outside of real life and adulting.
Yeah.
So I'm actually pleased with that amount of progress. I am making progress on hopefully losing weight because that is also a need for this cosplay and for my health. So I am also working on that. And yeah, progress is slow. I wish it were faster, but I don't want to starve myself.
Yeah,
exactly. That's unhealthy. And it's also unpleasant. So yeah, that's my cosplay updates.
Cool. All right, I'm going to swivel over for mine. Because it's not a whole lot, because I haven't really had the opportunity to do much in the last 2 weeks. Because we've been having to do a bunch of housing repairs and maintenance and all that fun stuff. And now that my craft room is not accessible at the moment, it's kind of limited me on what I could do. But at the very least, my book prop for the Book of the Dead is all cut out. It's a big chonking book, and I got all the pages in here too. You might be wondering, Val, this seems extremely oversized. It's actually not oversized. I got from the auction website the exact size specs for the prop. And this matches exactly. It's 14.5 by 14.5 with a 4.25 depth. This is 14.5 by 12 because there's still the binding that goes on the side. And that'll make up the rest of the space. So yeah, it's a big chonky book. And good boy, is it a big chonky book. It's actually fairly lightweight because I'm making the whole stinking thing out of foam. So at least I don't have to worry about too much bulk with it. And it's not going to be a functioning book. It's just the front and the back. So this is a nice proper size Book of the Dead. It's not like the ones that you see on Etsy or on Amazon that are like 8.5 by 11. No, no, no. It's one of these suckers.
For a minute, I thought that you had a handful of 6 mil foam, which is the thick... Which is the thick stuff?
This is 8 mil.
That's even worse.
I mean, it's a big, thick book, though. When you think about it, like 4.25.
Right.
That's a lot. And this is right there before I add on the binding.
It is. But what I was going to mention is that the few times that I've seen 6 mil in the store, it's the 8x10 sheets. It's not...
Not the rolls?
It's not 14... It's not large enough for a sheet of 14.
I was able to get rolls of this from a craft store. So they definitely have them. And they do have the 6 mil too. But I was like, the 6 mil is a little, it's in that weird in-between size. So the cover of the book is 8. The pages are 4. All of the details on top are going to be 2 mil. And then the binding is going to be a mixture of 2 mil and craft foam clay. Mm-hmm. Since it's going to be a lot more of the sculptural elements with the weird bird things that they... I don't know what they are. They're not quite birds. They're not quite raptors. I don't know what the heck they are. They're these weird little things that clasp onto the book on top of the scarabs. I don't know. But I was like, you know what? That kind of detail work, I need to be able to mold them in some manner or fashion so I can do foam clay. I've worked with it. I know what to expect. It'll be fine. So yeah, everything has been cut out. Gluing will commence sometime this weekend. It'll be a very slow process because I plan to take my time with it so everything is nice and even and square, which means no hot glue. That's going to be weird for me. I'm going to be using rubber cement instead, so I have a little bit of time to kind of work with it and shift it around in case it's not quite center. So other than that, the only other thing I got to think about is the cover. It has these weird like curves on it that are actually like indented into the cover of the book. Not entirely sure how I'm gonna do that because I don't have a hot knife. I don't have a Dremel. The tools that you would use for such a process, I do not own and I am not buying anything. So it'll be an interesting experience to figure out how the heck I'm going to make that happen. So obviously that means the cover is going to go on very, very last because I got to play with it and test it and not accidentally ruin the pages underneath.
So you basically just need to carve into it for details?
Yeah. Oh, I screwed up my camera so bad. Hang on, let's see if we can get through. Yes, I need to carve into it for those details. And they're very smooth.
Does it need to be a hot tool?
I don't know. I haven't decided yet because I don't know. I haven't tested this. I can't skin the foam because I don't have the tools for that.
I have a soldering gun you can use.
I was thinking of pulling out my soldering gun, but I don't know if it's going to work or if it's going to be too much for this.
This is one I'm willing to lose if it doesn't work. Because it was one of those cheap, like, $12, $15 ones.
Oh, no, I'm not worried about the soldering iron. I'm more worried about the foam.
Right, but you had mentioned that you didn't have the proper tools. I'm saying I have a tool that you can use, have if you want.
I don't need more than scissors. Okay, Going Ape, you're going to have to tell me how this works then, because I don't know. My artistry mastery is not in props and armor or in foam. Like, I love foam to bits. This is not my expertise. fabric-esque. Sewing is my expertise.
Going ape is right. If you have a sharp set of scissors,
I do.
You can open them and use it like a utility knife. And then what you do is you take a hot hairdryer and you heat gun it because it causes the valleys to open up.
Yes.
And it'll enhance the lines that you draw with it.
And that's
just as long as you don't pierce all the way through.
Yeah, that's what I'm planning to do with the 2mm, because especially like with the scarabs and then the key piece in particular, because it's so stinking intricate in certain areas, I've already decided, okay, I'm just going to use this X-Acto knife that I have to just gently pierce it, get my details in, and then blast it with a hair dryer, and then that'll open everything up.
Yep.
So that might be one method. So thank you for that idea. Appreciate that.
If it was foam board, I use a veggie knife. I use a paring knife whenever
nice.
I have to cut into it. It works.
We're not going to knock it. If it works, it works. It's fine. But I've even went through the trouble of like numbering out my boards and stuff, so I know exactly where everything is going to sit. I have everything like outlined. Like, here's the top, here's the bottom, here's the side, so I know where everything's gonna be. I'm ready to go. I just gotta glue this sucker down and remember not to glue the cover.
Just set the cover in a different place entirely when you go to glue it, just so you're not tempted or distracted.
So I'm just gonna be in this mode of like, okay, I got one down, I let it settle, got another one down, let it settle, do. Oh. I know myself well enough, but I know that's also why it's taking me so much time, is because I don't have all the proper tools. So it's like I got to be more cautious and careful with everything that I do, because I'm not buying anything else for this. Either this works or it don't.
Right.
So there you go. That's the only update I have. Sorry, peeps. I wish there was more, and I want to do more. I'm sure the cutting of all of the freaking details on the cover is going to take me forever and a day, but when it's done, I can show that stuff off. That'll be fun.
All good.
All good.
Well, in that case, shall we get on to today's topic?
Let's.
So this was given to us by a reader. And, well, audience member. And it is, how do you become a cosplay photographer? And I know that I am not personally a cosplay photographer. I do occasionally take pictures of people in cosplay, but that is not a skill of mine. However, Val has done a lot of camera work.
I have done a lot of camera work. I have briefly done cosplay photography, but it's only been for, like, friends or just acquaintances. And I've never charged people. It's always just been for fun. I used to do professional photography as a wedding photographer, and I got out of that because wedding photography is very stressful and very painful, and you have to be 100% committed to it, and no. Just no. So my interest in it has moved more towards product photography, and I do a lot more of nature photography now. So it's shifted a lot for me, but a lot of the things you need to learn for general photography, you can use in all aspects. So that's kind of cool. I have enough knowledge of things and stuff.
Indeed, and gaining photography knowledge is actually one of the best things that you can do as a cosplay photographer. You both have to know how to use your equipment itself. So know how to use a camera, know how to use a tripod, know how to set up lighting, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But also just kind of general concepts on what makes a good photo versus what makes, I don't want to say a bad photo, but just maybe a less optimal photo. And then you also need to know, or at least this is only my opinion, this part, but you also need to know how posing works,
mm-hmm.
and how backgrounds work, and basically how to set up the cosplayer for success, because you may be working with a cosplayer that has never had photos taken of them before. Hi, been there, done that, as
yeah.
the person who's in front of the camera, not behind. And you kind of have to know how to give them directions. And you have to be able to give directions without necessarily touching them. Sometimes, if the cosplayer is okay with it, ask first. If they're okay with it, you can touch them and gently like move them into position and pose them basically like a mannequin. Ask first and they have to say yes. But otherwise you have to verbally tell them how to do what you want them to do. And occasionally it's also mirrored. So when you say move to your left, well, they're facing you. So their left is your right. So you kind of have to mirror everything. Yeah, I've had photography sessions like this. I am very bad at following directions, apparently. But just having that general sort of knowledge. Yes, composition. That is a great word for it, Sakura. Knowing how composition works generally can be a really big help to you. Not just as a cosplay photographer, but photography in general. It just helps with cosplay photography.
Yeah, there is this wonderful book. It's brown, and it's like the bare bones guide to camera making, camera work, filmmaking, something like that. But I know it's called the bare bones guide, and it is easily one of the best books out there for any type of camera work, from photography to videography, even for podcasting, or if you want to do your own YouTube videos or even Twitch streaming too, funny enough, because it gives you everything on like how to frame, how to compose a shot, the importance of distance, the importance of lighting and the three-point lighting system. All of that information is wonderful to have, and it's a book that I got like my first year of high school when I was in a media studies course. And it's the one book that I will go to all the time saying like, here is everything that you need to know about how to shoot with the camera. To kind of spin off of that, one of the things I was going to suggest is don't wait to get professional gear to start taking photos. Just start taking photos, because it doesn't matter what kind of camera that you have. Heck, you can use your phone to start working on it, because in order to learn how to compose a shot, you need to do it on any camera, regardless of how good the equipment is. Because a camera isn't gonna adjust the light for you. A camera isn't gonna tell you how to pose somebody. A camera isn't gonna tell you if your distancing is correct or if your f-stop is correct. Just start taking photos regardless of your equipment. And that's also good to help too, because I mean, even though DSLRs are being discontinued and mirrorless cameras are becoming more affordable, it's still an expense, because you're not getting just the camera. You got to get the lighting equipment. You have to get the C-stands. You have to get the bags. You have to get all of the lenses, because there are multiple lenses involved. You can't just use the default one that comes in the box. You got to get other lenses, one for portrait, one for landscape, one for this, one for that. It adds up. It adds up to a lot, regardless of where you are.
It can.
It can add up to quite a lot. So just being able to get out there and just start taking photos will get you more comfortable with how to compose a shot, that when you move up to the nicer equipment, you'll realize, oh, I understand how to utilize this stuff. You can jump right on into it, and it's going to feel so much easier and so much nicer when your photography quality improves.
And speaking of equipment, you will have the choice of whether to use used equipment or if you want new equipment. And generally, as long as it's well taken care of, you can get used equipment and that will be perfectly fine. And it will honestly probably save you a lot of money over some of the newer stuff. And you don't necessarily even have to get the latest and greatest models that are out there. I mean, yes, obviously you get what you pay for. Yes, having the latest and greatest will enable you to do a great deal of things without necessarily having to work that hard. But it's also very expensive up front, as you know, money goes. And so, like Val said, it's actually better to get the practice on perhaps less expensive equipment first, mm-hmm. especially if it's something you already have around, because pretty much everybody I knew at one point had a point-and-shoot camera.
Oh, yeah.
Very basic. Even the old Polaroid, the film point-and-shoots, where you used to have to go and get the film canisters developed, those were really inexpensive, like $30, $50 cameras. And then they still took decent pictures,
yep.
all things considered. I still have a point-and-shoot as my primary camera. And while, yeah, it's old and outdated, it still takes decent shots, and it's really good for practicing on. Because, as Sakura mentioned, composition is really important. Mm-hmm. And knowing things like the rule of thirds can help you take better pictures.
Absolutely.
Regardless of your equipment. And then you can start practicing on things like perspective and posing. And you don't even have to take pictures of people. You can take pictures of landscapes, of nature. You can take pictures of objects. You can take pictures of your friends and let them serve as models for practice. One of the advantages that digital cameras have over film cameras is that with digital cameras, you can pretty much take as many photos as you want. And there's not a concern about running out of film, per se. I mean, yes, you can run out of memory, but you can always offload those photos onto a hard drive and then take more, or you can delete the ones that maybe didn't turn out as well. But you have a lot more leeway to take multiple shots at a time, and you're more likely to get a good one the more photos that you take. Some cameras have a mode where they'll let you take like 4 or 6 instantly in the same moment, but you can also just sit there and hit the shutter like 3 or 4 times. You'll notice a lot of pro photographers do this. If they take your picture, you'll hear the camera go off like 4 times. And it's, you take multiple shots just in case something happens. If there's, you know, blur in the shot, if for some reason the camera didn't focus correctly, if something happens with the lighting, or maybe somebody walks in behind the photo, because that happens at conventions all the time. And I always get really embarrassed if I don't notice in time, oh, hey, someone's having their picture taken, I should stay out. Not everybody notices, it happens. But that's why you take multiple pictures at a time. You have all this memory, use it. You can always scale down the photo quality and do like normal quality as opposed to fine quality or as opposed to superior quality. And that way the pictures take up less space on your hard drive, but they're still good. Ah, the days of film cameras.
Right. I have seen a couple of photographers actually bring film cameras to a con and get them developed afterwards. And they're really interesting to see because they still have the same type of quality in terms of the shot composition. It's just a different effect to it because it used film. It's pretty neat. One caveat I wanted to add to the camera equipment, I will say that there is usually a shutter count that a camera will have before it starts getting a little deteriorated in its mechanics on the interior. But we're talking about like several hundred thousand shots. So you really could literally just take as many as you want to before you see your camera actually die out. So I just wanted to make that little caveat in there. But yeah, the suggestion of always take pics. Don't ever stop taking photos, because the only way that you're going to get better and your skill is going to improve is to constantly take pictures. I mean, one of the things I did starting out, like I will point to my plushies behind me, is I was using my plushies as my models. Because it helped me learn composition. It helped me learn, you know, how far away I need to sit and stand, how to do portraits, how to do close-ups. I mean, they make for great models. They just sit there. I have to work around them. So I have to learn a lot to figure out what's going to work and what's not going to work. So, hey, it's a great way of doing it. But I was also going to suggest is if you really want to get more personal experience, like you want a living person in front of you, go to a local convention. Take a bunch of hallway photos. I can promise you pretty much every cosplayer that you stop and ask like, hey, can I take your photo? They're probably going to stop and be like, yeah, absolutely.
They'll be flattered.
Yeah. It's a great way to get experience right then and there. You don't have to, if you make a mistake and you mess up on the photo, that's totally cool. This is your chance to learn. And the only way you're going to do it and learn from it is by going out and doing and learning.
And again, when you go out to take these pictures, you don't have to have uber professional equipment.
Oh,
you don't have to carry multiple lens bodies with you.
No.
You don't have to carry like multiple types of lenses. You can literally use your phone. You can use a point and shoot. You can use a film canister, one of those old Polaroid cameras. That's fine. The point is to get out there and do the thing. Photography is a very hands-on hobby.
Mm-hmm.
Although I would recommend if you're going to be there for a long period of time, say if it's at a convention and you're going to be on the floor for several hours at a time, I do recommend either bringing a camera strap with you, preferably like a neck strap, or a tripod. And that's just so that you can rest your arms from having to hold up the camera for multiple hours at a time, because your arms will get tired after a while. So take a load off every so often. And tripods are pretty inexpensive. Even good tripods are still decently affordable.
The one that we have for our camera, I think I only spent $25 on, and we've had it for how many years now?
Yeah.
It's a good quality.
I have the
tripod.
Same tripod myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The next thing I do want to mention is the importance of lighting, learning how to use it, both studio lights, the three-point lighting system, and natural light, because natural light is your best friend, the golden hour, which is right as the sun is rising, and you get that beautiful orange glow in the background, both at sunrise and at sunset. It's so pretty. We love golden hour. But also learning how to light for all different types of skin tones. Because how you would light pale-ass people like Amber and myself is very different from everybody out there. Because I understand lighting me is incredibly difficult. I'm sorry, I cannot help my pasty whiteness. The sun is evil. But I know that it's something that photographers have to know in order to be able to capture everything correctly. Otherwise, I get blown out. Unfortunately, that's just the reality. But it's also good knowing how to light for anybody who is any shade in between to build up your portfolio and to be able to network with other cosplayers who want a photographer who's only able to do darker skin tones. That's a great way to promote yourself out there. Like, hey, I will shoot anybody. I don't care what your skin color is. I don't care what size you are. That's a good thing, guys. Learn how to light the darker skin tones, please.
And that's one of the reasons why having better equipment can help you in the future, because a lot of the better cameras, they don't have to be higher end, just more modern. The more modern cameras can display a lot more true tones.
Yes, better color quality.
Exactly. And they'll display, because anyone who's worked with electronic screens for any period of time knows that the color that's on the screen doesn't necessarily match the color that you see in real life.
Exactly.
And this happens a lot whenever you... Exactly. It happens a lot when you're shopping online for items, especially things like fabric for cosplay. And they'll have a disclaimer and they'll say, may not match color in sample. And so you kind of have to account for the fact that there's a difference in what you're seeing and in what the device is able to display for you in real life. And it's the same thing with people. But modern cameras are a lot better about that, especially phone cameras. Yay.
Yeah, red is a really difficult one. Red, in general, red is always going to be, if not impossible, near impossible for any technology to capture the true color of red. And it's just the way that cameras are designed. It's the way that our eyes are designed. We will all see the same red flower, but we will all interpret it differently because that's just what red does. But I will say having more modern equipment for my job, being able to take a photo of an actual like red geranium and get it pretty darn close to what I'm seeing in real life is very nice. I'm not gonna lie. So modern equipment, thank you for that, because red is very important.
And there may be some times when you'll want to purposefully put filters on your pictures that change the color scheme. So you may have, for example, a sepia tone picture because it elicits a certain vibe. And same thing if you want a black and white photo that has no hues in it except for grayscale. And it has a different vibe. And, you know, they do that a lot in wedding photography because it's meant to portray a certain kind of picture and tell a certain kind of message. And it's a very personal decision when you have photos like that. But it's up to you as the photographer to collaborate with your model to see, well, what sort of picture, what sort of emotion, what sort of story do you want to tell with these pictures? And so you can decide as a team what sort of vibe that you want and what filters to use. And you may play around with all of them as a photographer and go, oh, well, you know, I wasn't thinking about using this sepia filter, but it looks really good for this particular shot. Maybe we should use it. Experimenting is a really good thing. And you have plenty of digital memory. Use it. Take lots of pictures with lots of filters. Play around. And there are no mistakes.
Yeah. I was thinking of filters. The next thing I was actually going to say was learning how to edit photos, particularly with like Photoshop, Lightroom. You don't have to get Photoshop. There are other options. Please not Canva. Anything is better than Canva. But there are alternatives out there like GIMP. That's a great Photoshop alternative and it's 100% free. I would strongly recommend that one. But Lightroom is also fantastic too for just being able to adjust light, shadows, things in the background, things in the foreground. If all you need to do is adjust the lighting of an image, that's a great option to have. But definitely learn how to edit photos, how to do just a little bit of the cloning tool to maybe get rid of a stray hair, or maybe there's a stray thread somewhere flying away on a costume that you kind of want to cover up a little bit. If the model wants to have like parts of their skin softened a little bit, you can learn how to do that. You need to understand how to use all those editing tools to make it work for you. Or maybe you decide like, oh, I want to be the photographer who just puts people in front of a green screen and totally do these cool, awesome backgrounds. Obviously, you're going to have to learn how to do some photo manipulation to make that happen. So it's important to do that. You can use the wonder that is Google and YouTube to learn how to. Skillshare is a fantastic way to do it too, going to those types of online classes and online tutorials. So that way you can get the full gamut from professionals who know exactly what they're doing and can teach you how to do it step by step. There are loads of options out there, but you definitely need to learn, even if it's just the bare bone basics of, okay, all I want to do is a quick color correction, quick lighting correction. You've got to take the time to learn just a little bit of photo editing and shopping.
And once you get to a point where you know how to edit photos, and I know Photoshop shouldn't be the verb here, but I'll use it.
It kind of is
Once
the universal verb. I mean, it
pretty
just
much,
is.
once you know how to Photoshop a photo, then you start having to decide as an artist, because effectively that's what you become when you start editing photos. How far is too far? And we literally just did an episode about this, so you all are more than welcome to go and listen to our archives, which you can find on YouTube or your favorite podcasting medium. But you need to collaborate with your model, with your subject, to see, again, what sort of story they want to tell, but also where they may draw the line. Because they may want you to, for example, change eye colors because they can't wear contacts. Or they may want you to smooth out imperfections in skin, or they may want you to add special effects. And so you kind of have to decide, well, once you start altering this and it starts looking anime-ish, are you okay with that? Is this the story you're trying to tell? And so it's a lot of thought that you're putting into the final product. You can always experiment as you're working on the photo and you can try different things. But ultimately, you're going to have a final product that you're going to put out either to your model or post on your website or blog or whatever. And so you kind of need to think ahead about that sort of thing.
And one thing I did want to add too is being able to ask for feedback and understanding it and learning from it, because feedback is a very important process for any type of art that anyone does in order to improve the quality of your work. So if there's any cosplayers that you've worked with, you can ask them for their feedback, what they think about the photos, if there's any suggestions or changes they would make. There are also photographers that actually offer feedback sessions on Twitch and on Twitter and on Instagram who are like, hey, send us your photos and we can give you professional critiques so that way you can improve. You could totally do that too. It's a good way to kind of learn where your hits are, where your misses are, and then you can start adjusting what you're doing. Maybe it's just a simple thing like, oh, all you got to do is change the aperture. You just got to change the f-stop, and that will resolve most of your problems. Sometimes it's little tweaks like that. Some of it's just composition issues. Some of it might be color changes, whatever the case may be. But be sure to actively ask for feedback and search for it. And remember that there is a difference between critique and criticism and people just being jerks. You don't have to listen to the jerky comments, but the people who genuinely want you to improve will leave you thoughtful criticism in order to help you out.
And something else to consider along those same lines, when you start getting into cosplay photography and you start posting your photos, or your subjects start to post them for you after you're done, bear in mind that the internet can be a cruel place sometimes.
Only
And,
sometimes.
well, sometimes people leave nice comments, but you have to be aware that there will be trolls. There will be people who will leave negative comments on your photos. And you have to learn more or less to roll with the punches, because those words are not meant for you. They're not meant as genuine, constructive criticism of your photography. And so those should be discarded. Mm-hmm. Don't take them personally, in other words. There will be people who do offer constructive criticism when you post them. And those are the ones that you should evaluate. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you have to take it at face value. It doesn't mean the person knows what they're doing. That person could be an expert. That person could have never taken a photo in their life.
Sure.
But it's something to simply consider, to think about, put thought into. And then there will be people who leave you a lot of good comments, especially when you start improving, and they'll notice and they'll let you know as much. And that feels really good. So it will be a mixed bag, but it's just something simply to be aware of when you first start posting your photos. Not everyone's going to like them, and that's okay. You just have to know which comments to take seriously and which ones not, just so that you don't beat yourself down to the point where you think that photography is not for you, because it's very similar to cosplayers. Mm-hmm. When we post things online, when we share our cosplays and everything, you don't want to get so dejected that you think cosplay is not for me anymore, because that's not cool. We want everybody to cosplay. We want everyone to have fun. Same thing for photography. Absolutely. Basically is what I'm saying. So, yeah.
And then the other thing that I wanted to put out there is, at what point do you think that, let's say you've been doing this for maybe a couple of months or maybe even a full year, you've got some work going and you're like, okay, am I ready to start charging for photo shoots? And the way I look at it is, I think you are ready to start charging when, one, you have a very diverse portfolio, meaning you've got multiple types of cosplays, different cosplayers of different shapes and sizes and abilities and whatnot. Having that portfolio really can help cement the type of cosplay photographer that you are. And it's good to have that broad body of work so people can be like, okay, this person will work for me. They've got the style that I like. But also, you'll just kind of know when you've hit that point where, like, okay, I feel comfortable enough in my skills that I can start charging for it. That may sound kind of nebulous, but it's just one of those gut instincts that you're gonna have when you start seriously sitting down and evaluating your work. Like, am I at a position where I can start charging for this? And if you feel like you are, then you're gonna start doing it. You'll just know. And you can start out with a low ball amount. You know, you figure if you give everybody a 30-minute session or an hour session, charge them $40, $50 for that 30 minutes to an hour. Because you have to remember, it's not just the photo shoot. You're also charging for the editing afterwards. And your time is important. So make sure to factor that time in. Don't give somebody 100 hours of work for only $50. That's not a good value or use of your time. So just be mindful of that.
And generally, when you have your fees set for such things, it will generally be by time and not by photo. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to say like $2 per photo. No, you'll probably say by the half hour, by the hour, maybe 2 hours, although that's pretty rare.
It's pretty rare. I've never had anything go over an hour. And usually, depending on the photographer, some people will be like, oh, I'll give you anywhere from like 8 to 12 photos. Some of them will say, mm-hmm. no, you will get exactly 10 photos. You know, so you can kind of go with the flow on that one. Sometimes there's some photo sessions where almost every photo that comes out of it, you're like, this is great, this is great, this is great. And you might just send the cosplayer like the entire photo shoot. And you can do that. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just like, mm-hmm. oh, cool.
And you'll want to work with your subject on things like licensing, mm-hmm. if that is an issue. Because when you start getting experienced and you work with experienced cosplayers who want to sell their photographs as merch, then you need to consider whether or not you should get a cut of that. And if so, how much? What are the limitations on how they can sell it? Can they use it in other merch? Like if they want to have mugs made of the same photo, that sort of thing. It can get fairly complicated fairly quickly.
Yes.
But it's simply something that you need to think about before signing any contracts or mm-hmm. agreements with your cosplayers, is to make sure that you have that in writing. And if it's not in writing, then you can always make addendums to that. But do make sure that at some point you have it in writing before anything gets sold
Absolutely.
On the market. And on the flip side of that, when you start selling your photographs for money and you start getting to that higher experience level, there will also be people who try and get free photos off of you, and they'll try and ask for payment and exposure. And they'll say, oh, well, you know, we'll market your photo studio. We'll tell everybody all about it. We'll send you new people, but you can't charge us anything for the photos. And like Val said, your time is worth something.
It's worth something.
You need to decide how much that is. The answer is not free. It is worth money. It is up to you to decide how much, but please do not let anybody take your labor without compensating you.
Absolutely.
Exposure is not worth it. It's really not. So even if it's a nominal fee, like $5 for a 30-minute photo shoot, that's up to you. That's fine. Just don't give it to anybody for free. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. With the contracts, there are loads of free templates online that you can easily take one of those, copy paste it into a Word document. You can make adjustments to however you want to make adjustments to them, but you don't have to worry about going through and doing like a full legal course and like, let me spend $2,000 on a lawyer to get something drafted up for me. There are free ones that you can get online, and pretty much everybody respects them. Because as far as you're concerned, as the cosplayer is concerned, that's a binding contract of goods and services.
Yes.
And if either one of you breaks it, then you can take it to legal matters. But, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. So don't spend a bunch of money trying to make a contract happen. You can go online and find one for free.
Right. Just make sure whatever stipulations that you need are in writing before the photo shoot.
Absolutely, yeah. And everything should be signed, sealed, delivered before the photo shoot.
Right. And fees agreed to.
Yes.
Because you can't end up going back later and finding out, oh, the edits are taking me twice as long, or, oh, I'm going to take a tutorial course on special effects to do what you asked me to do. I'm going to need to charge you more money. You
nope.
can't do that unless it's in the contract.
Cannot do that.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, all of these things just require a bit of thought.
Yeah. And the only other That's comment all. That I have left is when you get to the point where you feel you're professional enough to start charging, just keep in mind that you are always learning. It's okay to still make mistakes. We all do it. I've been doing photography for I don't know how many decades now, long enough that most of you are probably were not even born yet, and I was taking photos. I still make mistakes. And I'm still learning, and I'm still growing from them. And that is 150% A-okay, because that is the only way that any of our skills are going to improve is if we make mistakes, we screw up, and we grow. That's the important part.
Two other things I would note. One is that when you start getting to a certain level of professionalism, you may need to start accounting for travel expenses. Because your models and subjects may not always be able to come to you, depending on schedule, where they live, etc. And if you want them to all come to you, that's fine, but then you need to have a place in your home set up for photography purposes. You can't have pets running through the photo shoot. You can't have small kids running through the photo shoot. You have to have a dedicated place set up, ideally a green screen, for photography so that they can come to you. If you don't have that sort of setup, then you need to be prepared to go to them. And travel can get pricey
yeah.
very quickly, especially depending on the convention. If you're doing this at conventions or if you're going out to venues like wedding venues, that sort of thing. So there is that. But also, most of all, the whole point of this is to have fun.
Yeah, have fun.
So yes, there can be complications. Yes, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of practice. It will take you a long time to get there. People will try and take advantage of you. All of these things, but it all kind of falls by the wayside when you consider that the whole point of this is to show your love for the hobby and to have a good time doing it. And so I would just simply encourage you that if you feel discouraged at any point in your journey, it's okay to take a couple steps back and just kind of take a break.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a permanent break. Doesn't have to be a long break. You don't even have to tell anybody you're taking a break. But just take whatever time you need and do something else, something that is not photography related, so that you can recharge and regain that love of telling a story through photography. All of us have been there. We've all had burnout.
Yep.
Been there, done that. Taken literal years-long breaks. But that's okay, because it does eventually come back. So take care of you first.
I think it's a good way to end the topic.
Indeed. So, of course, if you all would like to join in the conversation and let us know what your experience has been with cosplay photography, or if you have any tips and tricks for any beginners who would like to dip their toes into the pool that is cosplay photography, please feel free to join in the conversation via any of our social media, which of course you can find here.
For those who are watching, you know the information is located right underneath Amber. For our listeners who are not watching the video version but the audio version, you can visit us at cospod.org, on Facebook and Instagram at Cosplay Podcast, or on YouTube and Twitter at cospodcast.
You can also email us podcast@cospod.org, where you'll get an answer from each one of us, along with Nick Cage memes.
Guaranteed, I promise.
Because he somehow still ended up as the show's mascot.
I've heard wonderful things about Renfield, so I really want to watch it now.
Otherwise, please stay safe, stay healthy out there, keep working on this cosplay so that we can all see your smiling, shining faces at a convention local to us ASAP. Otherwise, we will see you all next time in episode 275. Happy cosplaying, everybody. Good night.
Bye, everyone.